following program is recorded content created by the Truth Network.
It's Matt Slick Live. Matt is the founder and president of the Christian Apologetics Research Ministry, found online at carm.org. When you have questions about Bible doctrines, turn to Matt Slick Live for answers, taking your calls, and responding to your questions at 877-207-2276. Here's Matt Slick.
Hey, everybody, welcome to the show. It is me, Matt Slick. And let's see, it's Friday, January 28th, 2022. Boy, if you want to give me a call, all you got to do is dial 877-207-2276. And I want to thank you for listening. We appreciate it. If you are interested in watching the show, which means me sitting here at my desk and headset on and all that kind of stuff, then all you got to do is just go to carm.org, carm.org. And you can watch the show. There's a link on the right-hand side. It says Matt Slick Live. And all you got to do is go there, and you can watch. Not a big deal. But we do have people in the chat room that's associated with that, and a lot of people really enjoy that. We have a lot of good conversation there as well. So, you know, good fellowship there. Good stuff. All right, if you want to give me a call, all you have to do... Hold on a sec. All you have to do is... dial 877-207-2276. And sometimes I do hate mail on Friday, so maybe I'll do some today if we get a little bit slow. And if you like hate mail, call up and say, hey, do hate mail. People enjoy, apparently, hate mail. Not because it's hate mail, but because of how I react to it. I get a kick out of hate mail. I really do. All right. Why don't we just jump on the phones? Let's get back with Anthony from Virginia. Anthony, welcome. You're on the air.
Hey, Matt. I wanted to continue the question we're having about all knowledge must ultimately be grounded in the existence of the Christian Trinitarian God. You appealed to the transcendence of what you referred to as abstraction.
Yeah.
And that they're basically not dependent on the human mind. How would you respond to someone who asserts that abstractions are simply concepts generated by the human mind based on its observations of reality, and that there is no justification for the claim that they are universal?
That's stupid. Okay, that's how they know what they're talking about. I'll show you why. To say they're not universal abstract thoughts is ridiculous. Okay, let me show you something here. I'll do two, three birds with one stone here. So, are you familiar with the law of logic called the law of excluded middle? Statements are either true or false. Are you familiar with that?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So, I'm talking to you. True. Okay. I live in Madagascar. False. I'm on the moon. False. I'm 6 feet tall. True. Okay. So, statements are true or false. Now, I'm going to ask you, is the statement that I'm going to give you true or false? Are you ready? Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. It is always wrong for anyone to torture babies to death merely for their personal pleasure. True or false?
Let's just stick to the idea of abstraction, like the
Can
abstract
you
idea
the
of
Can answer the question,
number.
What do you think that I don't have? I haven't had this conversation before? Of course I have. I'm going to go in here and show it to you by killing two or three birds with one stone. So is the statement... true or false? It is always wrong for everyone, to torture babies to death merely for their personal pleasure. Is the statement true or is it false?
I would say it's true.
Okay, so if you say it's true, when we say it is always wrong for everyone, you're saying there's a universal moral obligation to everyone, right?
Well, I would say I believe that.
Yeah, you believe that there's a universal moral obligation to everyone, right? Right. You believe that?
I believe that.
The answer is yes, you do. So what you're believing is that there's a universal abstract principle that's obligatory to everyone, right?
Yeah, right.
Now, how do you ground that universal abstract concept? Because if you just believe it on yourself, about yourself, that's okay. But the statement's not about yourself. It's about everybody, everywhere, all the time. This means it's universal in place and in time, and you are affirming its truth value. Now, how do you ground that?
That's a moral law. I think there's a difference between a moral law and an abstraction.
Let me explain. Morals are abstractions. Thou shalt not covet.
Anthony,
let me explain. Morals are abstractions because they occur in the mind. You don't find a moral under a rock. You don't take a picture of it. You can't weigh it. It doesn't diffract. Okay? It's not a physical
ultimately,
property.
Ultimately, what makes it moral is that God would punish us for doing something like that.
Anthony, take your right hand, put it in front of your face. Okay? Slap yourself upside the head, buddy. I want you to listen.
Matt, you're disrespecting me.
If you don't like it, you can always leave.
Well, okay. I want to have a real conversation with you.
Okay, so I'm trying to have a conversation with him, and he's going to do disrespect to me. Stop whining. Here's the thing. I'm trying to get him to understand a concept. He doesn't want to understand the concept. It's the same problem that I have with atheists as a whole. When we get to this, when I said I'm trying to kill two birds with one stone, this is exactly what I'm trying to do, is show that there's a universal moral absolute. But the universal moral absolute is an abstract principle. Abstractions do not occur you don't grow them with seeds out of a packet. You don't freeze them. You don't weigh them. They're not properties of the physical world. That's the point. I've gone over this with him before. He continues to argue. He doesn't want to listen. They are not properties of the physical realm. You don't extract moral obligation and truth from looking at rocks or seeing how tall a tree is or looking at the perihelion of a planet. You don't do that. Therefore, they are not, so to speak, of the physical world, or not property of the physical world. Since they're statements that describe a moral action, therefore they are abstractions. They are abstract entities, but they have a universal quality, which is what he said. So what I'm doing is showing him there's a universal moral truth, but it's a universal moral truth is still a universal truth, which has an abstract quality and an abstract essence. So how then does anybody have a universal moral truth, particularly in this context? How do you have that? How do you have an abstract principle, an abstract truth, which occurs in the mind? How do you have it be universally true, always, everywhere, all the time, which is what he asserted is the case? How do you have that in an atheistic, materialistic worldview? You can't. You can't justify it. You can't bridge the gap between is and ought. It's called the is-ought problem. Something is, well, why ought you do it based on what is? So, because I'm trying to show him, he doesn't want to listen, because I'm trying to show him there's a universal abstract principle, the question then becomes, how do you justify a universal abstract principle? And in the case of morality, what you're saying is, how do you justify that there's a moral obligation based upon a universal abstraction that everybody is obligated to submit to? That's the ultimate question. He doesn't want to listen. I've already refuted the idea that it's a property of the universe, that it's something we observe. When I talk to him about the issue of morality, he wants to go and forget that. But the idea of universal principles are still the same. And what I'm doing is showing him there's universal principles that are moral. There are universal principles that are true. 2 + 2 = 4. Here's a question. Ought you believe that 2 + 2 = 4? Is the necessity of believing 2 + 2 = 4 a moral obligation? And the answer is, yes, it is. Because 2 + 2 = 4 is grounded in the mind of God. And everything that God does is proper and true and morally correct. Therefore, you morally are obligated to believe 2 + 2 = 4. An atheist will deny that. Well, they can deny it all they want. But I can ask them, why is it that you ought to believe any moral truth? Why is it you ought to believe any logical truth? Then they're going to go into consequentialism or pragmatism and say, well, the consequence doesn't work. But that's not an ought. It's just an issue of pragmatism. And then all they're doing is just saying, they're trying to bridge the is-ought barrier. They're trying to say, well, it is that you ought to believe it. Otherwise, you get hurt. Well, why is that bad? Well, because it just is. Well, why? Because you say so? So what I do with the atheists, I start asking these questions. When they start positing a possible answer, I dissect their answer and show that it doesn't work and continue to do this repeatedly. And what always happens is they go in circles. The reason they go in circles is because they're chasing their own tails. They don't see what the truth is. They don't want to see what the truth is because they don't rest their truth in God, who's the ultimate. They want to find an ultimate apart from God. They want to find how 2 plus 2 equals 4 and why we ought or ought not believe it based upon secularist ideas. But then they can't ground them because they can't defend universal moral principles, because universal morals and universal oughts and things like this are abstractions. How do you account for an abstraction that's universal and carries an ought with it, both logical, necessary, and moral? Because statements have those qualities to them. And that's another discussion. So I've had this discussion countless times, as you guys can tell, and unfortunately Anthony is not interested in really understanding the issue. I've spent a lot of time with him, and maybe we'll do it again sometime, but so much heresy, so little time. Let's get to Rick from High Point, North Carolina. Welcome, you're on the air.
Thank you. How you doing today?
Doing all right. A little frustrated with the illogic of unbelievers.
I can tell. I do have a question. Did I not just hear you say an atheist would disagree that 2 plus 2 equals 4?
No. An atheist would disagree on the methodology of grounding. So let me explain something, what grounding is. Okay.
Okay.
In a physical way is, like, I'm sitting in my chair. Well, why is the chair here? What grounds it in its existence? Well, because somebody made it. Well, who made them? Well, you know, their mom and dad, where'd they come from? And you go back and you go back and you back and you say, well, what grounds it? Because if you're going to say that, well, I sit in a chair, why? Because the chair is here, and you stop, you're not asking the difficult questions. You're just saying, well, I'm going to stop here at this level. But there's, well, why is the chair here? What's the purpose of the chair? How did it come about? Because someone designed it. Well, what's the purpose of the design? Where did they come from that they have this ability? It's called the ultimacy of grounding. That's what I call it, the ultimacy of grounding. Where does things come from? How do you know? When we talk to atheists, we talk to people about epistemological issues, about knowing things, they're not able to ground their knowledge. What they will say is use rationalism, empiricism. They want to go into meta-ethics. They want to go into varying things of Platonic norms. They postulate all kinds of potentials, and they beg the question in the process. I didn't get into all that. And so they're not able to ultimately ground what they ultimately believe in. That's not to say they can't ground or believe that 2 plus 2 is 4. So they can believe it, but they can't ground why it's true. That's the problem. And this is what the issue is, okay? That makes sense.
It does. Okay.
Okay.
Okay, it does. Right. Secondly, now, like I said, to me, you're one of the greatest Bible teachers I've ever heard of.
But that means you've heard that one. Okay.
No, I've heard quite a bit. But here's my point. Okay. Let's just say, I'm going to throw some names out there. Tony Evans, David Jeremiah, Chuck Swindoll, James McDonald, those guys who I know you've heard of. Let's just say y'all get into a conversation, and they interpret something, a scripture, different than you. Do you think that what you say is going to supersede what they say, or y'all just going to agree to disagree?
I'll answer that when we get back from the break, because I've been in that situation in panel discussions where the people I'm with, if you don't agree, I'll tell you what I do. All right. Hey, folks, we'll be right back after these messages. Please stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Matt Slick Live, taking your calls at 877-207-2276. Here's Matt Slick.
All right, everybody. I was just reading some hate mail. Boy, oh, man, it's a good one. Oh, so much heresy, so little time. Rick from High Point, welcome back, buddy. You're on the air.
Yes, I am.
All right. So what do you got, man? What's up?
No, we were just talking. You had asked one of my questions. What I was talking about.
I remember now. Sorry. What do I say when someone I disagree with, you know, whatever? I've been on panel discussions, and, you know, I believe in infant baptism, for example. And a lot of people don't. Now, I believe it for covenant reasons, not for salvation, but as a covenant. I'm a covenant theologian, where oftentimes we'll be up there with people who are dispensational. Okay. And so there, a question might come in from the audience and say, for example, this has happened, so what's your stance on infant baptism? And people will laugh because they know I'm the lone covenantalist in this respect. And so, you know, like I have three panelists, and one will go, then two, then me. And so the first two will, you know, give their reasons why it doesn't work, it's not biblical, and the whole bit, and I'll say, you know, I might come up, and because we're friends, we're all going to be, you know, and I'll say something like, well, when you guys want a serious Bible study to learn the truth, let me know when we can have a discussion. In the meantime, listen to these guys over here. And, you know, it's meant, you know, as a jab, a friendly jab, and that's how I kind of handle stuff and just have fun. Because it's not really.
Doesn't mean so.
What's okay, that?
But I wouldn't talk. I was specifically talking about, like I said, so Swindoll, David Jeremiah, mm-hmm. guys who have been out here for years and years. Mm-hmm. I was talking about if you and them, and they know as much about the Bible as you do, if you and them, if y'all disagree, then your analogy would be right and theirs would be wrong.
It depends.
Is that right?
If it's on a debatable issue, then I'm not going to worry about it. Okay, say, yeah, we have differences of opinion. Let's move on. If they were, someone were to say, for example, Calvinism is heresy, and I'm on the panel with them, or I'm discussing, I'm going to look at them and say, you shouldn't say that. It's not a heresy. And if you want to have a discussion with me publicly later, we can do that. I'll challenge them right then and there, because that's something that should not happen. But do it politely, but I would do that. And say we're to have unity in the body of Christ, but if it's you know, essentials, we unify, but the non-essentials, we show tolerance. And we should not condemn each other or others' positions that way. Now, I don't agree with Arminianism. Okay. I do not agree with it. I think it's got lots of problems. But I have Arminian friends. I go to an Arminian church. You know what? And they love Jesus, and that's what's important. So in those kind of contexts, I don't worry about it, you know?
Okay. Now, I want your opinion, and please don't hang up. I just heard you talking to this guy and who got you frustrated. And he said, put your hand up beside your head and slap yourself.
Yeah.
He said, I think you're being disrespectful. And you said, well, you can just hang up. But now, on a serious level, do you not think that was disrespectful? What if I said
it's
that
meant,
to you?
No, I don't think it is. I think it's meant as a humorous way of saying you're not thinking clearly. Because he's not thinking clearly.
But he didn't think it that way.
But, well, it's his problem, because I've used it several times with him, and I repeatedly have said to him, look, you're not listening. You're not hearing it. I didn't say that. How many times have I said that to that guy? Like 15,
okay, so no, I missed it.
Yeah.
In other words, you got a history with him, so I get it. And let me tell you why I really called.
Oh, yeah, he's called several times.
Let me tell you why I really called.
Yeah, he's called several times during the week. That's fine.
Okay.
But repeatedly...
Okay.
I've said, no, that's not the
position.
Over
and over.
Yes. In fact, the people who are in the chat room who are hearing this, I want you to type in, because it takes 20, 30 seconds, type in, is that not the case? Have I not said this numerous times with him? That's not what I've said. You know, you're not hearing me. And so it was only after like a 10-minute conversation when I would, no, that's not it. And then I finally said, look, just like 3-4 days ago, I said, take your right hand, put it, now slap yourself upside the head. You know, because it's like, come on. You know, and Vicky says, yeah, way too many times. That's what she says. So, yeah, so it's there you go. All right.
Okay, now let me tell you why I call. Okay,
right.
This is what I'm struggling with. Sin of commission and sin of omission. Now, is there a different degree of sin between those two?
There are different degrees of sin, and it would depend on which one to, in each context, to kind of lean towards an idea of what might be worse or not. It's very subjective. There's no list, except that Jesus does say, he who condemns me, you know, about this stuff, has the greater sin. So there are greater sins. So murdering a bunch of people is not as bad as stealing a paperclip. Okay?
Okay. Okay. Right. This is the context I'm looking at. Okay. Let's say, I already know it's wrong for me, and I'm not married, but when I was. Okay, I won't get into that, but let's just say I'm married, and I know omitting sin I know it's wrong for me to go sleep with another woman. Okay. Now, so that's a sin of omission that I know I should not do, and I don't do it. Okay. Okay. Now, but if I decide to sleep with that woman, it's a sin that I know that I'm committing, and I know it before I do it.
No, okay, let's back up. Sin of omission is not doing what you should do. And a committing a sin is doing what you should.
That's what I want you to explain to them.
All right? Okay.
Okay, explain the difference between the two, and then I have it straight.
Well, if you know you should tell the truth about something in a certain situation and you don't, that's a sin of omission. But if you purposely lie, that's a sin of commission.
Got it.
Okay?
You make it so easy. I got it.
All right.
Matt, that's why I love talking to you. You and I have talked a few times and we disagree, but we're civil and we get a good rapport at the end.
Absolutely,
I can imagine you get a ton of hate mail.
I get a ton of hate mail,
but you don't let it bother you.
No, it's okay. It's no big deal. I get a ton of hate mail. I enjoy it. But hey, look, you and I would be friends if we lived near each other. Okay, I could tell. All right.
So, there you go. Right. Thank you, man. Have a good day.
All right, buddy. God bless, man. All right. Hey, let's get on the phones with Alberto from Georgia. Hey, Alberto, welcome. You're on the air.
Hey, good evening, Matt Slate. What do you think about that? You know, Christian was supposed to live a pure moral life, right, before they marriage and all that. But I think it's fair for them to get the leftovers from people who became Christians.
I can't understand you.
Is it fair for Christians who could have been so pure morally, but then people who come to church who had a promiscuous lifestyle, like an ex-porn star or a prostitute or, you know, so... And then when they married a Christian, because they're so pure before marriage, but then now the Christian got the leftovers for somebody who
I don't even mean by leftovers
out in the world, so they didn't have to pray that pure and holy, you know. So
I don't understand. I'm sorry, I don't understand what you're saying.
Is it fair for the Christian who are not going to be pure morally, sexually, but then people from the world get saved, but they had a previous lifestyle of promiscuous or ex-porn star or
ex-hooker. Okay, got you. They were promiscuous before they became Christian. Okay, and now what?
Yeah. So it's fair for the Christian to marry somebody who's been, you know, that kind of lifestyle.
Who's been promiscuous. Okay, I got you.
So it's fair for a Christian to marry.
So here we go.
To somebody who's been that.
Here we go. Mm-hmm. Let's say there's a person, male or female, who is promiscuous for years, and then I'll tell you when we get back. There's the break.
Okay.
All right. Hold on. We'll be right back. Folks, two open lines. You're going to give me a call. 877-220-7227. We'll be right back.
Matt Slick Live, taking your calls at 877-207-2276. Here's Matt Slick.
All right, but welcome back to the show. Okay, now. Oh, yes, here we go. Alberto, okay. So,
hello, I'm right here.
Okay, I had to type something to our missionary in Malawi, who just said he couldn't make the meeting today, and he said, boy, I go, no big deal. Okay, so what do you do? So let's say there's a man or a woman, doesn't matter, they're promiscuous, and very promiscuous, and then they get married, or then become a Christian. Is it okay for a Christian who's been pure to marry someone like that? Yes. It's okay. And the reason is because the blood of Christ washes away that sin and cleanses them. If that person says, as I like to quote Romans 6:21, what benefit were you then deriving of the things of which you're now ashamed? For the outcome of those things is death. So the Christian now saying, I am ashamed of what I did. It is all sin. It's all gone. And then get married, that's okay. And I actually know very, very well, I know a couple where that is exactly the case. Okay?
Yeah, but the thing is, it's fair, though. Is it fair? Because the person...
I mean, it's not fair that Jesus cleanses them?
No, it's not. I'm not saying by that part, but it's a fair...
That's what the issue is.
You get in the leftovers from somebody...
Don't say leftovers. It's not leftovers. Okay, that's not the way to say it. Okay, so if you were to marry a woman who, well, you know, she's been around, but now she's been a Christian for 5 years and has kept herself pure before the Lord, you know, okay, fine. But, you know, you move forward. Those things are behind you. Those things are but dung. Those things are gone. Mm-hmm. You move forward.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Okay, I can understand that. Okay, I understand that Christ cleans and washes them. When a sinner comes to Christ, that last that they had before. But they, how come we have so much forgiveness for the sinner when they come to Christ with the lifestyle they had? But when a Christian falls on sin, Christians, oh, they're quick to condemn the Christian when he flips up.
Because they know better. They've claimed the name of Christ, and they've defamed the name of Christ. Therefore, their sin, you could say, is even greater. And how can you trust someone who has been cleansed, who's trusted in Christ, and then goes against him? That means they can't really, you know, can they really be trusted? That's why when I do marriage counseling,
but we all fall though.
This is why I do marriage counseling.
We all fall by mistake.
Yes, I got that. When I do marriage counseling, premarital counseling to perform a wedding ceremony, I tell the couple, and I've counseled well over 30 couples, okay, that if you mess around, then we postpone the wedding a year. And they're like, what? Well, that's right, a year, or I won't do the wedding, because I want to make sure you're walking with Christ, and he's more important. So, you know, there are issues, and there's ways, and there's things, but it's okay to marry someone who is promiscuous and then is repented as they've become a Christian. Okay, that's fine.
But, I mean, mm-hmm.
Nothing against a Christian.
Yeah, but what about the person carrying some disease from their lifestyle?
Wait. Alberto, that's not what your topic was. Now all of a sudden you're talking about all kinds of stuff. Those are all different issues.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Mm-hmm.
So, all right? Okay.
Okay.
Okay, buddy.
All right, being realistic, that's all.
All right.
All right,
Alberto, God bless.
God bless you.
God bless. Let's get to Justin from Kentucky. Justin, welcome. You're on the air, buddy.
Hey, God bless.
God bless.
Happy to be on the show, Matt. As a Reformed Calvinist, I work at a facility, which is a secular-based facility. We have a church group that comes in a couple times a week and ministers to the facility. And I've done some research on them, and they're an independent fundamental Baptist group.
Mm-hmm.
And then I started doing a little more research, and they're a King James-only mm-hmm. Baptist congregation.
Mm-hmm.
So, what's your viewpoint on that? And if it's against that belief, how would you approach that situation and kind of slowly kick the legs out without offending people and still being able to develop a relationship?
You won't be able to not offend them. King James only people. King James only people believe the King James in the English is inspired of God, and that it's even more correct than the Greek and the Hebrew. And I'll ask him, I'll say, well, then does that mean that all other translations in the world should be translated out of the 1611 English King James Bible? The German should be out of that English? You know, you have to start asking the questions. And often, you know, they can't answer this kind of question because it doesn't make sense to say yes. And they often are very committed to King James only, and it's the way, the truth, and the life, and all other Bibles are corrupt, and you're just subject to a corrupt Bible, etc., etc. So you have to work with individuals, and it's very difficult, and it takes a lot of time, and they're often kind of whacked. But some King James onlys are really level-headed. You know, they'll say, no, we just prefer the King James. We think it's the best. And, you know, if you don't use it, that's okay. And that's fine. Just depends, okay.
So do you have any links on your website or any
yes.
preferred questions that I could maybe approach?
Well, go to
Carm. With?
Go to Carm okay. and look up the King James Only section written by Luke Wayne.
Okay.
Okay? A lot of good stuff there.
Absolutely. I have one more question if you don't mind.
Well, we've got three guys waiting, but really fast. What do you got?
Sure. So I also work with a Muslim who just recently transferred over from Nigeria.
Yeah.
And grown really close with this guy. He knows my standpoint. He knows that I'm reformed and heavy in my thinking and my beliefs. Mm-hmm. And he is a heavily practicing Muslim. And he is not, he let me know that he does not want to hear the gospel.
Okay. Here's what you do.
Okay.
What you do is you befriend him. You become his friend.
Sure.
You do things together.
Okay.
And you have to understand, from the culture, fellowship is far more important than sometimes in some cultures, religious talking. And in some Muslim countries, couches are more important than the TV. You come in, you have to sit in the couches, and you have fellowship when you talk. And then you're allowed to have more serious conversations after a period of time. You can also say, hey, I want to go to your mosque and go check it out. And eventually he'll start asking you questions, and then you can open the door and start preaching, okay?
Absolutely. Okay. Appreciate it, man. Thank you for your help.
All right, Justin, man. God bless. All right, let's get to Matt from North Carolina. Matt, welcome. How are you doing, buddy?
I'm doing good, man. How are you?
Doing all right. Doing all right. Hanging in there. All right, what do you got, man?
I know Jesus had two natures about him.
Yes.
Did Jesus have a sin nature?
No.
He didn't.
No, he did not fall. There was no sin. Adam fell, and those in him fell, whom he represented. As 1 Corinthians 15:22, Romans 5:19. But the theory is that sin is transferred down through the male. There was no male, and so in Jesus' patronage, ancestry, and so the sin nature was not there. He did not have a sin nature. Okay?
All right. Thanks, man. I appreciate it.
All right, man. God bless. Okay, and for Old Testament reference for that, folks, go to Deuteronomy 17:1. You shall not sacrifice to the Lord your God an ox or a sheep which has a blemish or any defect, for that is detestable to the Lord your God. So if Jesus had a sin nature, that would be a defect, wouldn't it? All right, let's see, next longest is Gary from Ohio. Gary, welcome. You're on the air, buddy.
Hello. Hey, Matt. Hey. You know, I'm a born again Christian.
Good.
For about 6-7 months now.
Good.
And I was one. Yeah. Great, man. I feel great about it. you know, my question is about with giving to God, like your church or things like that. I know you. What do you start with? 10%.
You can.
My thing is, what real quick is, I've heard other pastors what's that point in the Bible where God says you store so your goods equal to fruits and things in heaven?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Can you help me understand that a little bit better?
Your reward is in heaven, and you're storing up treasures in heaven.
Okay.
Some pastors will say, okay, if you're tithing, then you're storing up treasures in heaven. And I've never said that.
No, I'm not talking about you. I meant to say other pastors.
I know. But I mean, I've never said
What's
that.
What's true? Okay, you haven't. Okay.
Yeah. Now, the truth is... We'll give you some theology so that we can answer the question a little bit differently than you might think. Okay? We've got to wait a little break.
Okay, buddy.
So hold on. We'll be right back. We'll talk to Gary about the Holy Spirit, about the tithing and Old Testament law. How's it relate to the New Testament? We'll check it out when we get back. Please stay tuned.
Matt Slick Live, taking your calls at 877-207-2276. Here's Matt Slick.
All right, everyone, let's get back to the show. Let's get to Gary from Ohio. Gary, you're still there.
All right, buddy. Yeah, I'm here. Anxious.
All right, buddy. You're right in there. All right.
So you
want to know about tithing? Okay.
Treasures and fruits in heavens, right? Is that what that is called?
Matthew
6.
New
to Matt.
It's okay, man. It's all right.
Okay. Cool.
So, look, Matthew 6:17, I'm going to start reading. But when you fast, you know, go without food. Anoint your head and wash your face so that your fasting will not be noticed by men, but your Father who's in secret, and your Father who sees it, what's done in secret, will reward you. Do not store for yourself treasures on earth where moth and rust destroy, etc. You go, whoa. The funny thing is about that, he's talking about fasting. A lot of times people will say, you want to store treasures in heaven, then you have to tithe. There's a truth to that, but there's also an error in it. So let me give you some theology.
Oh, my goodness.
So in Romans, I'll go this quickly, don't have to memorize all this, but in Romans 6:6 and Romans 6:8, it says you're crucified with Christ and you died with Christ. Romans 7:4 says he who has died is freed from the law. The law says tithe. You're not under the law because you've died to the law in Christ. You don't have to tithe. You don't have to do. You don't have to do any tithing, okay? Not obligated to.
Gotcha.
What I tell people is, you're free to tithe. You're free to.
Okay.
I don't have to tithe.
Gotcha.
I do. I give money. Sometimes more. Sometimes less. Sometimes I help others. Sometimes not. Sometimes this. Because I'm free to serve God. If it's a requirement, then that's a problem. If it's a requirement in a legalistic sense, now we have the issue of the heart. So let's just say I have a $100 bill and I go up to the tithe box and I put it in. I hate doing this.
I know what you're saying. I gotcha.
Yeah.
Yeah. You do it out of the heart because obviously
right.
God knows. Yeah.
Right.
God knows
so
if it's not.
Right.
Yeah.
Keep going.
No, if I see somebody, you know, I've bought some people meals that are, I just go give them food or I've given some people cash. That are out begging. It's like cold here in Ohio, and I'm not doing that. I mean, I know God's watching, but I'm not. I like to do it. I know now that I'm like, I don't want to pass up an opportunity. If
there
that makes
go.
Sense,
yeah. And so here
and I don't do it because I have to. Because
there you're right. You got it. If you me take a $100 bill, put it in the tithe box, and we hate doing it, there's no reward in heaven. If we say, hey. I get to put a whole dollar. All I have is a dollar today. I put a dollar in. Lord, thank you. It's all I got, but there it is. That's a reward in heaven. Right?
Exactly. I got you. Yeah, I got you. And same way with church. You don't look, you know, you're giving to your local church. You don't, I got to go. I'm single, and, you know, I'm waiting on the Lord to, you know, to guide me to the right woman. Mm-hmm. I mean, I know you're supposed to, like, you're supposed to not try to convert. Right, but
right.
Match yourself up with believers, right?
Right. And here's the thing.
I'm waiting.
You're a new believer.
I'm waiting on that.
Okay, I've got some advice for you, all right? You're a new believer, and hopefully you want to find a good, godly woman. And, you know, a guy, I understand.
Yeah.
You want to be nice looking and nice and et cetera, right? Okay? Hey, you know, that's what it is. Now, a lot of times what young men will do is say, and they'll pray, Lord, I'd like to have a, you know, if it's okay, Lord, have her be nice looking and a good body and blah, blah, because we're guys. And love you and be good with children and things like that. And I'm looking for that, Lord. Amen. Thank you. What should be a prayer more important than that? It would be this. Lord, make me the man you want me to be for the woman that you have for me.
Oh, that's nice, man. Yeah.
Because looks fade, bodies fade, and then you're, so to speak, stuck with this woman. Now, I don't mean that in a derogatory sense, but the reality is like, okay.
Right.
Now, you want a good woman who's going to love the Lord more than she's going to love you. That's right there. But also, ask God to change you. So that you're a good man for her. That's what you need to do most.
Oh no, that makes perfect sense.
All right.
Makes perfect sense.
That's what I wish I'd have done that before I got married.
Were you married a godly woman though?
Oh, she's a godly woman. Absolutely. I say that without hesitation. She's a very godly woman. Her taste in men is horrible. But other than that, she's a good woman.
That's funny. Well, how long? How many years?
35 years have been married.
Oh, okay. Gosh.
Yeah, we're 35 years. And she's a good woman. She loves the Lord. We've lost a child. We've gone bankrupt. She's got medical problems up the wazoo. And I mean, she's got some serious ones. She really. And there's been a lot of issues. And her faith has never waned in the Lord. Never.
Yeah.
Because it's not based on any of that or how nice I am or how if I have get my abs back, maybe she'll like me better again. But, you know, she's committed to Christ. And because she's committed,
I mean, you're not gonna. I mean, if you would have wavered, you would have wavered much further. Much, you know, you would have done it already.
It's impossible for me to waver. Because
amen to that, brother.
Yeah, it's impossible because I love my Lord more than I love my wife. I'm never going to offend Him.
Of course, you know what. Coming to, you know, what the feeling I got after I was, you know, I said this prayer, and you know, I remember getting out of the truck. I felt all this, you know, weight is off my shoulders, and, you know, you just feel like the whole week I'm like, you know, I feel like I'm just on, you know, I'm just, you know, I'm just so happy, But yeah, let me share an experience with you. I had in the Bible where Jesus says, where Jesus spoke when he was baptized, as he comes out of the water and that dove, like the effect of the dove resting on him.
Yes. Oh yeah. I'm here with it.
Man, I had. Say again.
Yep. Quick. Keep going.
Yeah. Real quick. I was outside of a hotel. And it was just me. I was meeting a doctor there. There was two doctors. And I wasn't praying or anything. I had not come to Christ or nothing. Later, I found that I needed this doctor to save my life. And he did save my life with the surgery. But, it's quite of a lengthy story. But what I felt when I turned and looked through the glass of the hotel, I had seen that doctor, and all simultaneously, I had that feeling. And I had this feeling of just focusing on this doctor's face. And I had met with him about a half hour after that. It is quite a, you know, I really don't tell too many people about it, but looking back on it as I've come to now, I had no idea at the time. It actually silenced me. So, just wanted to share that with you.
It's okay. You are experiencing things in a new way with a new light. And you're going to see more and more of these and have more and more of these. That's what it is to be a Christian. So good for you, man. All right, buddy?
Yeah. Great, buddy. Hey, thanks a lot, man. Right. Keep up the good work.
By God's grace. Okay,
bye-bye.
Gary.
Okay.
God bless. All right, let's get to Jennifer from Mount Airy, North Carolina. Jennifer, welcome. You're on the air.
Thank you. Hi.
Hi. So what do you got?
Oh, I have my boyfriend is incarcerated, and he listens to your show every day.
Good.
And he has questions because he's recently got reconciled with God.
Good.
Because he ran from him for a long time. And he wants me to ask you, who are all of the people or the things in Revelations about the false prophet, the dragon, the Antichrist, the beast of the sea, and the beast of the earth? And he says he thinks he knows the dragon is probably Satan, but are the Antichrist and false prophet the same?
Oh, there you go. Now, that's the question. There's debate on this. Now, normally I would say, don't tell me, but I'd say, what's his name? And I'd say, hi, you know. But because I've done prison ministry for 9 years, you don't tell people's names and things like that. So he knows who it is when I say, hey, buddy, how you doing, man? All right. So he's smiling right now, I can tell. So the thing is, there's some debate on who the beast, the Antichrist, false prophet are. Now, the dragon is the devil. And some say the beast and the Antichrist are the same, but the false prophet is someone who bears witness of the Antichrist. Now, some say the Antichrist is an individual and the beast is a church or governmental organization, and the false prophet is another individual. So, and then there's some who say that the beast and the Antichrist are interchangeable. So which one is it? I'm not exactly sure.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah, that's what it is. All right?
Okay. Thank you.
Okay, Jennifer.
I guess that's all.
All right. Well, God bless. Okay.
Thank you.
All right. All right. So we have about 2-3 minutes left, and I'm going to read some hate mail. We got nobody waiting. And I love this hate mail. And people in the chat room say, hate mail, do some hate mail. So I love hate mail. I'm already laughing. And here's how this one hate mail starts off. Literally starts off this way. I am not surprised. Okay, so it's dash, dash, dash. I am not surprised, period. That's what he starts off with. Look, so I am not surprised. What surprises me is that you people, I go, wait a minute. So I'm like, whoa. I'm not surprised. What surprises me is, well, you just said you weren't surprised. So what are you saying what surprises you is? You know, it's like, you know, when people talk to me like that, I want to stare at them like, you know, is there some gear slippage? The clutch isn't working right upstairs? Something's not right. I'm not surprised, but what surprises me is, what? And he goes on, what surprises me is that you people profess to be on the side of Christ. Yeah, we do. But when someone really tries to tell it as it is in the Bible, it is considered offensive. See, what does that mean? Tell it as it is. Well, what does that mean? You know, someone said that to me. Well, I'm going to tell it like it is. Okay. Give me an example. But they don't do it. But when we do it, oh, it's just offensive. Well, wait a minute. Well, tell me what it is you're talking about. You know what it is. I've had people tell me that. You know, don't tell me you don't know. What? I'm not following you. He goes, of course, it is offensive. So this is a nonsensical thing. I am not surprised. What surprises me is that you people profess to be on the side of Christ. But when someone really tries to tell it as it is in the Bible, it's considered offensive. Of course it's offensive. Did I miss something here? Did I miss something? You cannot preach the gospel without someone taking offense. Well, yeah, I get that. In my case, even calm professing Christians take offense. Okay. You people are hypocrites. What? What did I do? I can't believe it. What did I do? I didn't do anything. So, at any rate, there you go. Let me remind you that you'll be accountable to the Lord. Okay. Thanks a lot, buddy. Oh, I love hate mail. Hey, folks, have a great weekend. May the Lord bless you greatly. And I hope you have a great weekend. And by His grace, we'll be back on here on Monday. And we'll talk to you then. God bless.
Another program powered by the Truth Network.